Okay, good morning, everyone. We're back to hearing take two. I'm going to turn it over to the hearing committee chair, Doug, with several more committee motions. And for everyone's notice, we beat a lot of stuff to death yesterday. I'm going to limit the council comments to two per person and with some time management on it. That we've got a long, full day ahead of us, and we still have a lot of work left to do on hearing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're now on to the fourth motion from the committee. This was a motion that the council support gear damage option A. Gear damage would be part of the mechanical failure, and this passed the committee unanimously.
Council motion that does not need a second, or any comments from the audience? Seeing none, I'm coming back to the council. Are there any comments from the council? Seeing none, I'm going to call a question. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 15-01.
Are we dealing with herring, and did something happen last night?
Doug, you're on a roll.
Well, if you'd like me to continue to be on a roll, I was going to move on to the consensus recommendations and leave the fifth motion to the end, if that's okay with you.
I'm going to follow your lead.
Okay. All right. Karen, can you put up the first consensus item from the hearing committee? And that states that the catch not brought on board due to falling out of the gear would not be subject to additional slippage measures. And again, this is consistent with the staff recommendation and framework for discussion document. And again, this is a consensus recommendation from the committee to the council.
Okay, are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, are there any comments from the council? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-00.
Next consensus recommendation is notification of slippage events via VMS would be required to facilitate enforcement.
Committee consensus recommendation. Are there any comments from the audience? Back to the council. Ellen?
Is this for ABNC vessels?
Lori?
Well, it would be for whatever vessels the slippage measures apply to, which at this point the committee recommendation is A and B vessels. Although it may, I think maybe we should just clarify this, because currently the management measures to address net slippage that we implemented in Amendment 5 apply to A, B, and C vessels. The move-along rule that's in the alternatives is proposed to apply to A and B, so this probably could use some clarification. I think that the VMS notification for slippage event is intended to facilitate the enforcement of all regulations related to slippage, but it's certainly something that the council should clarify.
Ellen.
I offer a friendly amendment stating notification of slippage events via VMS would be required to facilitate enforcement for A and B vessels.
Seconded by Terry. Are there any comments on the motion to amend? Terry?
Well, not directly, but the enforcement committee did support a VMS requirement for slippage events, self-reported. So just wanted to add that in.
Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just another question for Lori. Lori, this would only apply to those vessels carrying an observer, right?
Yes, because the management measures to address net slippage apply when a vessel is carrying an observer.
Are there any other comments on the motion to amend? Seeing none, those that support the motion to amend, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. We're back to the main motion as amended. Same sign. Mike, are you voting yes or no? Yes. Okay. Motion carries 16-0-0. Doug.
Thank you. And the final committee motion is motion number 5, that the council adopt slippage alternative 4, move along 15 nautical miles for slippage due to safety, mechanical or spiny dogfish, as well as a trip termination, option B for all other slippage events to apply to categories A and B permits. This passed the committee 5-2-3.
Committee motion does not need a second. Go out to the audience. Any comments on the motion? Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the council. I'm Jeff Kalin, speaking for Lunds Fisheries, Cape May, New Jersey. We've got two midwater trawlers that commonly work in pairs, the Enterprise and the Retriever, and work with an independent company owned by the Axelson family, the Durston and Flicka, tend to be single boat pretty much. So we oppose this motion. I just spent a lot of time on the phone this morning with one of our captains working through some of the issues we discussed yesterday, and I was able to talk to a couple of fishermen at the table about the operational aspects of what we do. They don't understand why, if you have a mechanical failure, you've got to move, or why, if you run into dogfish, you've got to move 15 miles. We think it's a spanking that doesn't have any biological relevance whatsoever. And the question that came up this morning, well, first of all, we're burning about 30 gallons an hour on these boats, so we're burning a minimum of 100 gallons of $4 a gallon fuel, and we are efficient vessels compared to many other in the fleet. So we're burning several hundred dollars worth of fuel to move 15 miles, and then what do we do when we get there? We've got to ping before we go. We got to get there, then we ping again. The fish that we were working on that we've been searching for is 15 miles over in the other direction, depending on which direction we go 15 miles in. When we get there, can we go back to where we were just fishing? How long do we hang around in the movable closed area that's been created by this option before we go back to where the fish are? Because it's not likely there's going to be fish there. So now we've burned part of, not only have we burned fuel, but we've burned part of a day, a very expensive day. These platforms are very, very expensive to operate. And you know, so now we're taking fishing opportunities away from people who have a mechanical failure. Safety, we're not using that obviously very often, but it's been there for years. These are not new exemptions. These exemptions have been in this fishery for years. And we lost them in the closed areas. Yes, we did. And I hope that the groundfish industry will pick that back up someday, as I said yesterday, and examine the biological implications of the groundfish closed areas. This motion doesn't speak to that. We're totally opposed to this approach. And we would like to ask someone on the council to substitute this motion for alternative 5, which preserves the three exemptions outside of the closed, outside of the ground fish closed area. And the consequence is, if one of our captains slips fish for anything outside of those three areas, and if they do, they have to use the affidavit. If they slip for any other reason, we ask you to terminate the trip, send the boat to the beach. There is no bigger incentive to a captain than to eliminate the trip and put them on the beach at the end of the period. But we shouldn't be penalized for running into dogfish. We shouldn't be penalized for mechanical failure that we likely can repair on site. If we can't, then we've got to go in. But we're equipped to fix these mechanical failures at sea. Why should we be penalized for a breakdown? Why should we be penalized for dogfish? Why should we have to burn $4 a gallon fuel to steam somewhere in the ocean where there likely is no fish? We don't necessarily have to go 15 miles to move away from dogfish. Give us some credibility in terms of how we can operate and prosecute this fishery. The resource is not overfished. Overfishing is not occurring. So we're totally opposed to this approach and would like to see this council, like the Mid-Atlantic
Jeff,
Council,
you're
end up in the other
yourself option.
Thank you.
Chris.
Hi, Chris Wiener, tuna fisherman from Portland, here for Acquire and American Bluefin Tuna Association, as well as myself. I think that after a number of years of working on this, where we started out in a much different spot, we've all come down to a spot that I don't see how any this could be described as anything but the bare minimum in our minds. You don't do this as a council, and I think most of the people I'm speaking for just don't even do anything. Because putting a bunch of exemptions into a rule like this is meaningless. Meaningless. If you're going to say, if you don't think that those exemptions are going to be used, then you don't know human nature and fishermen very well. The issue here is to simplify it. Let's make it simple. You dump, you move. It's that simple. You can talk, we could, you know, hopefully we're not going to do what we did yesterday, which is go around in circles and make something simple sound incredibly confusing. Because this is simple. You move 15 miles, it's going to be across the fishery. Moving 15 miles is not that big of a deal. We cover 175 miles on our little 38-foot boat every day. And we pay the same amount of fuel as everybody else. That's not too much to ask. All you have to do is show the observer the fish. That's all this is saying. You don't show the observer the fish, you move. That simple. Is there another fishery? I mean, does groundfish have a rule where you can dump? No. And so, you know, I think the issue here is this is simple. These are big boats, and they can handle this. This is very reasonable. And for the people, I think a lot of people I speak for think this isn't even enough. We've come to a point where this is no longer enough. But we've become down to this 15 miles. At first, it was you go home, no matter where you are. And then there was a 10 slippage event thing. And then we're at a point now where you move 15 miles. And it's simple. And if you can't, in terms of enforcing it or dealing with it, every day, on our little, I even know my phone, I could do it. I could hit a button and just stay 15 miles away from that point to the rest of that trip. So, you know, I think it sounds complicated when you talk about this in depth, but it's simple. And I think this council needs to do this. And if you're not going to do this, and I'm not saying this rhetorically, just don't do anything. Thank you.
Ryan.
Ryan Raber, Fishing Vessel, Providian. We spent days and days trying to find a half a mile piece of fish as a fleet. So when you say we have to move on 15 miles, it's not like we're moving on. You terminated the voyage. We spend an inordinate amount of time finding a little tiny patch of fish. There's a lot of fish there, and we find them, but they're not spread out. You can't just move down the bank 15 miles and find more fish. It's the end of the voyage. And the dogfish is where this is really difficult, because you get into an area of fish, and you might not know there's dogfish there until you haul back and you have the issue. And then once you know they're there, you can wait for them to stratify during different points in the day, and you can get a toe on the herring when they're clean from the dogfish and work them. But you can't move on 15 miles once you found those fish. It's a termination. It's not like we can just move down the bank a little ways. It doesn't work like that. The alternative five, you can send us home I think that's a better way to go. But this doesn't make any sense. You know, we can't be expected to spend all that fuel, you know, not the 15 miles of fuel, 100 gallons. It's the fuel we spent the last 3 days trying to find these fish. You know, the 10,000 gallons of fuel we've spent trying to find these fish. That's what's at risk here, and the time that we spent looking for them. It's not just a simple move down the bank and find some more magic fish. It doesn't work like that. Thank you, Ryan Raver, Vidian.
Dave, then Steve.
David Gaethel, Ellen Diane. I don't have a dog in this fight because I don't have an A or B permit, but I'm going to offer you some thoughts for consideration. First of all, to me, this is arbitrary and capricious. Why 15 miles? Who picked 15 miles? Where's the biological reasoning? Where's the anything? It's just a number. Could have been 15 feet. Could have been 15 yards. Could have been 15 furlongs. You know, it's just a number. And so I think you ought to at least, if you're going to have 15 miles, you better offer an awful lot of justification for why that's the right number. I'll offer you a second thought for consideration. You move 15 miles down the fathom curve, you're probably going to catch the same thing you caught 15 miles ago. I know a lot about fish, and I know fish stratify by fathom curve, not by mileage. And, you know, a lot more logical way of doing this would be to say change depth by 10 fathoms or something like that. When you're in Ipswich Bay, and where I fish, 30 fathoms might be dogfish, 40 fathoms would be whiting, 48 fathoms would be heron, and 50 fathoms would be dogfish again. And so if somebody moves 15 miles and they were in 40 fathoms and they set out in 40 fathoms again, they're going to probably get exactly the same thing. So, you know, I don't see the rationale for this. You know, I don't see that. I actually see the law of unintended consequences. I see that you're going to make things worse. You're going to have people setting out in places where they're probably going to catch the wrong mix of fish entirely, when they could move perhaps a mile to the east or west to a different fathom curve and get the right fix. Another thing I heard at the enforcement committee meeting is, you could tell what these fish are on a fish machine. Well, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I've set more times on dogfish that I thought were heron than I would care to talk about. You know, all it does is it tells you that there's fish there. And by the colors, it tells you how thick the school of fish is. And I've seen dogfish marked just like heron. I've seen heron marked just like whiting. I've seen whiting marked just like heron. You know, so just driving around the ocean and saying, I could tell on my fish machine what it is. You know, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. And so, again, I would suggest you really seriously think about what you're about to do here, because I think it could cause more problems than it solves.
Steve.
Steve Weiner. Sorry, I just walked into the room because I rushed home last night. Didn't know I was going to be back here again this morning. So I'm getting my thoughts together. I guess this is the most efficient fleet on the East Coast. These are the biggest boats. They catch the most pounds of fish. They're targeting our forage base, which is why I've been here from the beginning. And I guess I'll be here till the end, which maybe is today. I don't know. I hear whining, crying, safety concerns. If you knew, you really need to understand this fishery better than I think you all do at this table. Yesterday was frustrating to me because I don't know how many of you really know how they set a net out, how they haul a net back, how they insert the pump into the cod end, how they tie the cod end back up. I mean, I think there was just such a lack of knowledge here for the people who are supposed to be managing our fisheries that it was really discouraging for me. I hear one of the captains or owners one of the boats just spoke before me saying that he has to search high and low for small little bits of fish. It's kind of what we've been saying for a long time, people, all of us, who spend a lot of time on this ocean. I've spent hours and hours and hours I fish outside of Ipswich Bay. My perspective is much different than just a fisherman in Ipswich Bay. Last year I fished from the Canadian line down East Maine, all the way down, but you didn't go that far to the south, maybe, you know, Franklin Swell. We hunt for tuna who eat herring. It's pretty simple for me. If there isn't herring, there isn't tuna. They're the most highly migratory fish, and they don't have to hang around here if they don't like what they see. And they haven't been. This is a real problem. Somehow we have all spent a lot of time trying to impress upon all of you at this table and some of you, and some before you, how important this is to us. The people I represent are not the environmental community. They're not the big boat fishermen. They're lobstermen who depend on herring for bait. They are ground fishermen who depend on herring to feed the ground fish they're trying to rebuild. They are real small Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire fishermen. They really are. They don't come to these evenings anymore because we all know why they don't come here, because they don't think they're going to get anything out of it. Yesterday's conversation, I mean, we're talking about boats yesterday who are complaining about bringing 100 pounds or 200 pounds of fish aboard, and you guys all let them get away with it yesterday. You left open a huge loophole. You have one of the captains saying here that they search in the high and low for small little places of herring. And then they all attack that little place. If you've been on the ocean, you'll see it. They all attack that little place. And they fish it dry. To move 15 miles, they're going 150, 175 miles offshore to move 15 miles. I mean, in perspective, that's the northern end of Jeffries to the middle of Jeffries. That's probably the elbow on Jeffries to Platts is more than 15 miles. The northern end of Jeffries to the Kettle is more than 15 miles. I mean, we're not talking big distances here, people. Perspective, 15 miles. This is all about closing up loopholes, forcing a fishery and a gear type that never should have been allowed into this Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank. But it's here, so we have to live with it. You've got to monitor it. You have to watch what they're doing. You have to hold their feet to the fire, because what they're playing with is they're targeting our forage base. I'm not going to say any more, and Terry, thanks for letting me speak this long, but I am very disappointed with the New England management process.
Sean. Then Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sean Guillen, members of council, on behalf of the Ad Hoc Pelagics Coalition. First of all, I just want to say that we don't support this motion. The organization I represent, I think most of the people would like to see the rules with respect to this issue aligned with those that the Mid-Atlantic Council has adopted for the mackerel fishery. That would be alternative five, the three exemptions, no move along, but if any other unauthorized slippage event occurs, there's a return to port. I think in terms of what the three measures are meant to accomplish and the overall purposes for which we're discussing this issue of trying to prevent and minimize unauthorized release, I think the return to port for any unauthorized slippage is a pretty conservative approach. One of the things that I think it's important for the council to consider and discuss is, as we move through this, is what is the purpose of the move along? We're talking about three exemptions. One, the mechanical failure, the winches seize, something happened. I'm not a captain or a crew member, but there are circumstances. The net couldn't be retrieved. The fish were released. Safety is obvious. It may seem subjective. It's going to necessarily be subjective because there's only a captain who's responsible for the lives of his crew and his vessel. and then the dogfish issue, which nobody doesn't recognize and just makes it impossible to pump the fish out of the net. So I think the PDT had, you know, raised the same concern about what are we trying to accomplish with the move along in terms of the safety issues or mechanical failure. There's really no rationale between the reason the fish were released and the area where the vessel is. Dogfish is the same, but again, that's I think Ryan sort of explained the way that works. But, you know, it is important to keep in mind, you know, obviously they're not going to reset on dogfish, and to the extent they can avoid it, they will. But an arbitrary move along of 10, 15, or 20 nautical miles isn't rationally related to the dogfish issue, as Dave Gaethel was saying. I mean, they could be along the same curve. But, you know, what Ryan was saying, and I think was a bit mischaracterized is that
you've got another
most
minute.
Of a vessel...
A minute to summarize, Sean.
Yeah. Most of the time of a seven-day trip is going to be spent in the search. And the... you know, once you find the school, you're going to work on that and then move to another area, you know, and hopefully come home with a full hold. So there are costs involved with that. And what's the purpose of the move along? What's the benefit the move along provides relative to the costs that are imposed? I think that's got to be shown in the document to meet the legal standards. Thank you.
Go to Gray, then back to the council.
Good morning, council members. My name is Ray Kane, Fishing Vessel Frenzy. I support this motion, but I have a question. I've been sitting in this audience over the years. I sat at the enforcement committee meeting. I heard this word affidavit discussed once again this morning. I heard it yesterday. Lori, can you give me an idea of what this affidavit is that they're talking about?
You mean what it is?
Yeah, and where it's required, and when is it submitted, and how many have been submitted?
Well, a slippage affidavit form is required for all slippage events, not just ones that fall under safety, mechanical failure, or dogfish. And with the implementation of Amendment 5, I believe the regional office has made the affidavit form available online so that you can access it and take a look at it. And all of the vessels can access it easier. And there is a host of information that's included on it, which was detailed in Amendment 5, including all of the information about the released catch event and estimates of the composition and amount of fish released and details of regarding the event. So those forms are now required for all events with the implementation of Amendment 5. And my understanding is they can be obtained with relative ease at this point from the regional office.
Second part to my question was how many of these affidavits have been submitted to, I guess, the observer program or enforcement? Who gets it?
Well, the observers do not... are not involved at all in the enforcement of regulations. So this is something that would be dealt with through the regional office. And at this point, we do not have affidavits submitted.
Thank you.
Sorry, Patrick, I didn't see your hand was up. So, Patrick, and then we're going to go back to council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that the committee's motion is a responsible compromise, and I urge the council to support that compromise solution. I would be irresponsible to the 33 fishing groups that I can put on a letter regarding this that I regularly have to report to as to what happens to this meeting if I didn't tell you that we do not believe that the council should get into the habit of handing out exemptions to fish to any vessel so that they cannot follow the rules. And that's exactly what this is. Make no mistake about it. Dumping or releasing fish with an observer on the boat so the observer can't see it is not allowed. It results in a NOVA. It results, even though it's not being enforced right now, although there wasn't much discussion about that at the Enforcement Committee, it's supposed to result in the consequences of a fisheries violation. It happened 27 times in the ground fish closed areas in the last 2 years. It wasn't enforced. This motion is all about giving an exemption to a rule that's going to poison data, that's going to give us worse data. The whole point of this is to fix Amendment 5, and the whole point of Amendment 5 was to get more accurate and reliable data. So this is a little bit bizarre to my community. That being said, this is the compromise. The 15 miles is not arbitrary. If you saw it in your document, it was actually the middle of two ends that was derived by Mid-Atlantic staffer Jason Didden, took a five-mile median toe, which meant half the toes were bigger and half the toes were smaller than 5 miles. Then they took a range of the three options. It was laid out in many a document. I find it sort of unusual to be having a safety exemption in this fishery and not in every other fishery. If my boat is in jeopardy because of something happens, can I get out of the rules? Can a groundfish boat get out of the rules? Can a tuna boat get out of the rules because all of a sudden we declared a safety thing? When I got my maritime license, and I'm a holder of a master's license myself, and I run vessels, and I am responsible for a crew and for passengers at times, and I'm told that when I'm in a safety condition, get out of the safety condition, to hell with the rules, and report it to the Coast Guard, and to go through a protocol that supersedes anything this council can do. And that, to me, should be left wholly. It should be left in the place where it is. When you start regulating around the word safety, I find it crossing a very serious line. But this is about giving permission to get out of the rules. And if you're going to give permission, if you believe the argument and if you accept the argument that this fishery has some situations where they have to be allowed out of the rules, there must be some sort of consequence / disincentive. This is a compromise solution. I urge you to support lots and lots of years at a committee. This is the compromise solution, but it does work. Thank you.
Back to the council. Gene.
Yeah, just to be clear, once a vessel moves, then for the remainder of the trip, there's this circle area 15 miles from where the incident took place that the vessel cannot return to for the entire trip. Is that correct? Is that how it works?
Tom.
Sorry, was that a question of someone to Lori, I assume?
Lori nodded her head.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
In concurrence.
Unresolved, the issue of operational discards that we discussed yesterday. In the interest of addressing operational discards, which I think we have to do, I'd move to amend this motion and include the words, or for operational discards, after spiny dogfish. If I get a second, I'll happily provide some more rationale.
Seconded by Matt McKenzie. Tom.
Our interest here, throughout the conversation, throughout the framework, is really about incentivizing boats to bring catch aboard and make it available to be sampled. Operational discards have to be addressed in that context. We just can't remain silent on them. I think what this does is it allows a consistent, clear approach. If it incentivizes people to bring on what would otherwise be operational discards, in the event that you honestly cannot get that aboard, that small, trivial amount of fish, if that honestly can't come aboard, then fair enough. But we're applying the consequence measure just like we would in the event of spiny dogfish clogging the pump. So this is, I think, a fair approach and builds off the work that the committee did.
Because this is a motion to amend, I'm going to go out to the audience and take two in favor and two against. Jeff?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin, Lens Fisheries. If I was at the table, I would call a point of order about this amendment, Mr. Chairman.
This was an issue that was dispensed with yesterday. The operational discards were dealt with by this council. And on a tie vote, the prohibition against operational discards failed. The maker of the substitute was not on the prevailing side of that vote and does not have the ability to bring that issue back to this council. So, you know, my reading of Robert's rules is that this amendment is out of order. And whether or not the chair determines that, we're strongly opposed to this. I spent a lot of time on the phone with Patrick this morning to fully understand how these nets are pumped out. I had an opportunity to talk to both Terry and Peter about that before the meeting. There are some amount of fish after pumping that's captured in the net that once we tie the net back off is either in the net at that point. It's been observed. We saw the data yesterday. In fact, yesterday, Lori pointed out for me, the numbers that I gave you, the 0.004% to 1.6% of our catch represented, that's not all operational discards. Operational discards is a fraction of that. That's all the fish that has been released in 3 years by the observers. This fish is observed. So obviously we oppose the motion, and I believe it's out of order. Thank you. I believe that the amendment is out of order. Thank you.
Hi, Chris Weiner. You know, after yesterday, where we all stand, so I just wanted to say we support the motion to amend. Thank you.
Anybody else from the audience? Back to the committee. Tom?
Just to address the procedural issue, this is clearly not the same motion. The motion yesterday was a prohibition on operational discards. This is to treat operational discards as we are currently going to be treating safety, mechanical failure, and spiny dogfish. It's just a we'll have to vote it because it's a different measure with different consequences.
You know, I've just consulted with Gene and Mitch and Colin. Gene?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom's rationale is correct. You know, it's hard to be totally sure about this question because there's so many nuances involved with what's being intended for operational discards, but my understanding was that yesterday the motion had to do with prohibiting operational discards. This has to do with what happens with a slippage. It's not exactly the same issue, and it's in a different context. So I think the chair is okay in allowing this amendment to take place.
Okay. Remember, everyone gets two bites of the apple. Mary Beth.
I like that two-bite thing. Speaking to the amendment, the discussion yesterday, operational discards are not prohibited. But now we have a penalty for something that's not prohibited. I don't see how that adds up. I don't see how we could do that. You say, well, you know, operational discards are allowed in the fishery, but by the way, if you have operational discards, which you're going to have on two-thirds of every tow or more, there's a penalty. How do we do that? That's absurd.
David.
Yeah, I appreciate Tom's efforts. It's a clever way to get it back on the table and to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish yesterday. And indeed, it's not quite out of order, but it's close. I'm influenced by what Mary Beth Tooley said yesterday. She gave us a great metaphor, the straw. There always will be, or in most cases, there will be a little bit of fish left in the net, 20 pounds, whatever. There'll be something left in the net. So with an observer on board, with this motion, if it was to pass, they've got to move. They've got to move 15 nautical miles for having 20 pounds in their net as operational discards. Now, I fully appreciate the concerns of many individuals expressed yesterday and perhaps today about operational discards and the suspicion that there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. Wendy Gabriel got to the microphone yesterday. She made a particular point regarding operational discards. She did a good job with that. We have data before us regarding operational discards, And at times I'm torn on this issue. But the way the motion is worded right now, I cannot prove anything that will force a vote to move 15 nautical miles if it has 10 fish, 20 pounds of fish, some small amount of fish that's dropped back into the net as operational discards. It makes no sense to me. It is punitive. I would support the original motion. At the committee meeting, I did not want spiny dogfish to be included, but I've changed my mind on that. I will support the spiny dogfish in the three. No exemptions for spiny dogfish. But if this motion were to pass to include operational discards, forcing the move along, then I'm going to have to oppose the original motion, which I don't want to do. So I will oppose the motion to amend, and I will oppose the motion overall if this passes, but I will support the motion as originally stated because I do agree there should be no exemptions. I've changed my position on that.
George.
Point of clarification or question, I guess. For the purposes of this motion, would operational discards mean only if the fish were released, or would you still have the opportunity to leave some small amount of fish in the cod end and have it reset, the net reset, without triggering the consequences?
My sense all along is that that small amount, as long as it's subsequently available for sampling, then that's fine. I mean, that should be our goal. My goal in this process is that we make the entire catch available for sampling. So that's my intent in this, and I appreciate the opportunity to clarify.
Mark, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. I share Dave Pierce's sentiments on this. This embeds operational discards within the envelope of the slippage events, and I don't think they belong there. I wasn't here for that discussion yesterday. But I don't see these being linked in this way, so I wouldn't support the amendment. Thank you.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the amendment and the underlying motion. We're talking about trying to understand what's being brought up in nets. And my takeaway from yesterday's discussion was that we really don't know whether or not we're getting the assessment from the observers on the remnants of the net before it's released. We don't know how accurate that is because we don't bring the bag up onto the deck. This would allow us to get a better understanding of it. I agree with Tom's position that if you pump out and you've got some left in there, you could reset the net, fine, as long as at the end of the hauls, at the end of all the hauls, everything that has gone into the bag can be available for sampling. We're supposed to be getting better data for this. Amendment 5 and the corrections to Amendment 5 is about improving our data stream, the reliability of that data, and are moving away from self-reporting. This helps us do that, and that's why I support it.
Doug.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yesterday, as I was trying to make my decision here on how to vote on operational discards, as you heard from my original comments, I had concerns about this originally, but then thought maybe the test tow provision would alleviate it. But the thing that swayed me the most yesterday in voting not to include operational discards, or a prohibition on operational discards, was the comments from the observer program that stated that they believed with the small amount of of fish in there that when the observer data that is being collected is probably more accurate than the basket samples that are being extrapolated. So I think based on the fact that they have to open up the net and show the observer now under Amendment 5 what's in the net, I do believe that people can make an estimate on what's in the net. And so I'm going to not vote in favor of this motion.
John.
Yeah, I just wanted to put myself in the P.S. Gibson camp that I'm prepared to support the underlying motion, but with the addition of this, I'm going to be opposed to this motion, and if it's included, I'd be opposed to the underlying motion. I think while technically this is in front of us procedurally, I think there's well-crafted. It's a different approach to the operational discards. I do not think that should be included in this. So I will be voting no on this motion. And if it fails, I'll be voting yes on the underlying motion.
Lori.
Just for clarification on this motion would apply the move-along rule to operational discard events on observed trips by A and B vessels. So that's just consistent with alternative four. I want everybody to understand that it would apply on trips that have observers on board.
Are there any further comments on the motion to amend? Mark.
I, too, don't support this motion to amend. I was, after the discussion yesterday, I felt that I was not persuaded that the existing observer data on operational discards was insufficient. I remain skeptical that it's operationally possible for the herring vessels to bring always, in every case, bring the catch aboard. And I'm also concerned about the safety issues that may present. So, as other people have stated, I'm not going to support the motion to amend. And if it does pass, I'd probably be inclined not to vote for the underlying motion.
Terry.
Yeah, yesterday when we were talking about the operational discards, you know, I had a couple conversations last night, and Jeff came up to me this morning. And Lori's analogy of drinking through a straw, some of the stuff falls back in. I mean, I get that. And I understand that, you know, what we want to do is make sure that, you know, they're being observed. Every hull's being observed. So I think I'm going to oppose the original motion, and I will vote for the underlying motion.
Is there anybody who hasn't commented? Okay. On the motion to amend, those who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. And those opposed? Okay. The motion to amend fails of 4 to 12 to 0 and with one recusal. Tom.
Yeah, well, disappointed as I am, I think the committee's recommendation here in the underlying motion is a strong one. It sounds like there's a lot of support for it around the table as well. I think the committee worked hard to find the right balance and strike the right balance to incentivize the activities and the behaviors that we want to sample as much as we can while allowing for some reasonable exemptions. So hopefully we can move forward with this. I fully support this underlying motion. I think the committee got to a good spot here.
Mayor Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having listened to the comments around the table, I have a feeling that this motion is likely to pass. I will just say that I have concerns about the fact that we identify exemptions, and we identify them because, for the most part, these are issues beyond the control of the vessel. And that's why we have exemptions. This motion makes the exemptions moot. You say, well, we understand things happen and you can't control it, but by the way, here's a penalty for that occurring. So it places, you know, the captain in an awkward position, to say the least, of saying, well, you know, how safe is it? How unsafe is it? But if I choose to choose the safety exemption, you know, this trip could be done. I'm going to create for myself a 30-mile radius of a closed area where all the fish are. To me, that's a significant problem. However, again, having listened to the comments around the table, I think this motion will pass. I think that's wrong.
John.
We're going to support this alternative. At the mid, we supported alternative five. The main goal is to discourage slippage, and I think both alternative five discourages slippage. I think this is a stronger measure, which also supports or discourages slippage.
It raises the issue about consistency, about our vote, but also about the two councils' actions. And I don't know whether, if this passes, which it looks like, I'm not very good at counting votes. Professor Quinn is, I'm sure. Whether, if this passes, whether the, if consistency among the councils is a desired goal, whether the MID might take a look. The chairman is here. He might comment on that. But I think the issue that I thought about in the discussion at the MID was the one that Mary Beth just raised, the issue that a captain faces about is this a safe situation? And that is, that's an issue. People raised human nature. We can all imagine ourselves out at sea facing this situation, a safety issue, a human nature situation. We're trying to discourage slippage. It's a call you have to think about. But I think this is the right way to achieve the goal of discouraging slippage. So we will support alternative four this motion.
Laura.
I would agree with John that we are trying to discourage slippage and any waste of fish in the ocean, but and I agree with the safety concerns as well. My concern is that we are punishing a fishery for the realities of the ecosystem. And the herring, we can't thread the needle of catching the herring without the dogfish. If those two species coexist together, it seems punitive to the boats to make them travel away from something that they, that's just the way the fish, the ecosystem is out there. So that's what I find troubling about this motion. Thanks.
Anybody else? Rick.
Terry, just to John Bullard's point about consistency, I would suggest that after this council takes action, if there are substantial differences between the outcomes, that we would have to review that to determine if any additional action is warranted. Thanks.
Thanks for that. Okay. Those who support the main motion on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? The one recusal. Motion carries 15-101. Are there any other motions, Doug, from the committee?
Not from the committee, Mr. Chairman, but I did prepare some motions to address some of the recommendations of the enforcement committee as they relate to herring enforcement. And whenever you're ready for those, I'd like to bring them forward.
Yeah, Doug, do you think it would make more sense to do them now or during the enforcement committee report?
My initial thought was, because this is a herring issue, that it would be better to do it here. Lori brought up those thoughts in her presentation, so the council is aware of them. That's just my personal opinion. I think it'd be cleaner to do it now.
Okay, let's roll along.
Karen, if you can put up the first motion. And again, this is not a committee motion, so I'll need a second on it. The motion is the council send a letter to the Office of General Counsel requesting consideration of increasing penalties for non-reporting and non-compliance with requirements for an affidavit. And if I get a second, I'll provide some rationale.
Seconded by Terry.
In the enforcement committee report, there were a number of consensus recommendations that were put forward by the enforcement committee that for their suggestions to address enforceability of some of the actions that are going to be taken in framework four. And this was one of five bullets here that are on page four of the Enforcement Committee report.
Any comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't attend the Enforcement Committee, so it's difficult to, you know, I don't know what their conversation about this particular issue really was, but there's a penalty schedule and on how, you know, penalties are assessed. I don't have any understanding of what the current penalty, you know, how this would fall into that penalty schedule and how it would be viewed. Increasing the penalty, what does that mean? Increasing it to what? From my perspective, I think there's a tremendous amount of confusion within the industry. And coming back to the industry and saying, you know what, because you're confused, we're going to increase the penalty. I think that enforcement in general has dropped the ball on some of this stuff. We've had a lot of conversations in recent years about issues with enforcement. They hired outreach people. There's been no outreach. Enforcing, you know, increasing the penalty, increasing it to what? What is that going to accomplish? Why? What is it now? I don't know. I can't support the motion because there's too many questions here.
Mitch.
Doug, I just have one quick question. That's non-reporting as it relates to the affidavit only, or is it non-reporting generally?
That's what I understood it.
Just the affidavit,
yeah. But Lou may...
Yeah, just to perhaps provide a little bit of context, and if there are others who are at the Enforcement Committee meeting who can weigh in on this a little, it might be helpful, because this particular recommendation was agreed upon by consensus, but I think it was sort of discussed throughout the discussion related to the affidavit requirements for slippage events and the reporting of slippage events through the affidavit. And generally, I'm not terribly familiar with the penalty schedule myself, but the discussion at the Enforcement Committee, and I'm probably going to bungle this up, but I think when we talked about it at the Enforcement Committee, this was noted to be a level one or category one type violation or a category one penalty or something like that. And it was discussed relative to concerns about compliance. And the Enforcement Committee discussion really related to the enforceability of these regulations and the fact that because the regulations are tough to enforce, that maybe one way to address the issues would be to encourage compliance and to sort of encourage better compliance by making it a stiffer penalty to not comply. So I think that was sort of the context of the discussion. And it is this particular motion and this particular recommendation was really specific to the reporting of the slippage event through the affidavit, because there were some concerns expressed about how that particular provision may have been complied with and enforced in the past.
Terry.
Yeah, and I'd like to add on to that. I'm pretty sure that we talked a lot about the VMS part of it, too. And I'm not sure if that addresses... Because there was a lot of concern that guys aren't going to self-report. So in order to encourage self-reporting of a slippage event, you know, make the penalty a little stiffer for not self-reporting the slippage event so that law enforcement could have a flag to look at, you know, take a look at this trip because there has been a slippage event on board during this trip. So I think it... I'm not sure if that addresses it or not. I mean, I'd look for some guidance on that.
Tom.
Yeah, I'm looking at enforcement report. I think what Terry's talking about is a second consensus statement for a letter to be sent, or is it, be adopted to address the need for timely regular access to observer data by enforcement personnel. And maybe that's, it's Doug's intention to follow up with a motion on that issue. That'd be my understanding. With regards to this motion on the board, we realize now that we have almost zero compliance with the affidavit requirement. We've received zero affidavits, despite the fact that that rule is currently in place. There's two ways you increase compliance. You make sure everybody has the right information, which we've done. We've tried to hold some meetings with folks, get the word out. Maybe people are confused about the rule, right? The second is you need a penalty. You need to at least consider that maybe the penalty for not complying with that rule is inadequate to incentivize the behavior that you're looking for. So I think consideration of the penalty makes sense given an abysmal track record of compliance with this affidavit requirement. So I'll support this.
Ellen.
I would agree. The discussion had at the enforcement committee meeting had to do with the fact that it looked as if self-reporting wasn't working, and that one way to encourage self-reporting would be a stiffer penalty for not reporting. The other conversation that did occur was the definition of a slippage event, and the fact that an observer may have reported a slippage event and the captain for some reason didn't realize that. So this has just occurred to me recently. We need to make sure that there is communication that the observer has observed a slippage event and that the captain knows that when that happens, he has to fill out an affidavit. So that's an important piece to this that's not written, but I think that that Dr. Karp there's some problems with expecting the observers to do that, but in order to get compliance, we have to have some communication between the captain and the observer at some point, which may be a problem.
Mary Beth.
Thank you. I just have a question. If we were to send a letter such as this to enforcement, what would be the process? Would they just, can they just accept our letter and say, gosh, I think we'll just change the penalty for this? I mean, is there notice to the public? They currently have a notice out for change in the schedule. It's not clear to me how this would move.
I bet Joe can provide an answer.
Good morning. My name is Joe Heckwolf. I'm an enforcement attorney with the NOAA Office of General Counsel. This is particularly timely because right now NOAA is taking comments on revisions to its penalty policy. So if the council believes that the fine should be increased for non-reporting, we're at a place right now where we're taking that into consideration in addition to other comments on other violations where penalties should be either increased or decreased. So we would consider your comments and respond to them and consider increasing the penalty in the penalty policy.
So I appreciate that. One other quick comment. There was a reference to holding meeting with folks to inform them about these regulations. Well, I never heard of such meetings. Nobody invited me. And it didn't occur. Clearly, there's a lack of understanding of the current regulations. I do agree with that. Conversations I've had with people on this, I was very surprised at the lack of understanding of the current regulations, and I think that outreach is definitely needed, and meetings are needed. I don't believe they have been held. And when we create as a council very complex rules and send out, permit holder letters that apparently nobody understands, even though the agency has worked really hard to make them, clear, they're still not clear. And the reason they're still not clear is because of the work that we do here. So we create complex things. We're going to penalize people for not understanding them. We've done no outreach, and because of that, we're going to penalize them again. It's quite a process.
Any final words? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries 15-1-1. Doug?
My final motion is the council send a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service requesting that a process be adopted to address the need for timely and regular access to the observer data by enforcement personnel.
Second by Terry. Comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Mary Beth.
So, question. I don't understand why enforcement doesn't have access to the observer data at request. Is there some reason why they don't?
Who can answer that? Wendy.
Wendy Gabriel, Northeast Fisheries Science Center. They do have access to the data, and they have regularly accessed the data, as I understand it. I guess my question would be in terms of what the definition of timely is. Right now we have a 90-day turnaround for completely audited data, and we're meeting that turnaround target. And at-sea monitor data and regular sector monitoring data mostly turns around in 5 days.
I'll turn to the enforcement chair. Terry, what's your sense of timely?
Well, I think that maybe the VMS reporting was trying to have the enforcement committee, law enforcement, be able to look at raw data before it was, so that they could, you know, so law enforcement could call down and say, so I need this trip, and I know that seems kind of simple to us, but I guess that's not exactly the way it works right now. So it was more to look at the raw data to see if there was a slippage event and stuff like that. So that was my sense of the conversation.
Joe.
Joe Heckwolf, NOAA Office of General Counsel. I think it's one thing for enforcement to have access to mountains of raw data. It's another thing to have timely access, be timely notified of when slippage events occur. And that's what we need, and we need to improve coordination between the observer program and enforcement on that. And I hope the council encourages that.
Okay, a bunch of hands. David? Tom?
Thanks. I think Joe's right on the money. The issue here, I think, is that enforcement has access to observer information, VTRs, VMS slippage reports or affidavits in a timely enough way to quickly respond. So I don't think they need fully audited, perfect data. I think Terry's right. They need raw information, and we need to, you know, we need to be auditing and cross-checking to make sure that the information that we collect with regards to slippage is actually looked at, you know, and accessible for the enforcement purposes. So I support this, and I think Office of Law Enforcement and others should be encouraged to be cross-checking and auditing that data, especially when there's a slippage event on a trip.
Ellen, do you have final word? Okay. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 13-03. Terry?
There was one more bullet in that, Terry, that pertained to Heron. Do you want to handle that now, or do you want to handle that under the enforcement?
No, let's...
It's a fast...
Let's do it, and when we're all done with Heron, we're going to take a break before going to enforcement.
Okay, so one of the other bullets in that said clarify the 15-mile... move-along rule applies to when the vessel could resume fishing operations, i.e. the vessel would be required to move 15 nautical miles before it could set out for the next tow. There was some confusion on whether or not the boat could sit there and fix their mechanical trouble after they slipped the catch to make sure that they didn't have to get out of the area instantaneously because of a breakdown or something. They may be able to repair their problem and then move along 15 miles and set out. So they just wanted to clarify that. That was all.
Lori.
I apologize for not raising that, but I think I kind of just assumed that would be a given clarification in the document unless there was any. I didn't hear anybody object to that.
Is there any objection to that? Seeing none, thanks for bringing it up, Terry. Is there any further business before Doug makes a motion we're all hoping he's going to make? Doug?
I'll try and do this. I'll wing this, but I'd like to make a motion that we submit framework for yeah. Submit framework for approval.
Seconded by Tom Dempsey. Any comments from the audience? We beat this to death. Thank you all for a long, prolonged discussion, but we're going to move this question. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Anyone opposed? Anyone abstaining? And one recusal. The motion carries 14-0-1-1. Okay, we're going to take a break.